off again. But it's the only way you're ever gonna learn. You look back and it's all in the past. I'm dwelling on the thoughts I cannot say to you. If I don't say the words, then maybe it's not true.
Welcome along to Steve Wraith's True Crime Podcast, and today, delighted to welcome James Waldron, who is going to talk about the Rettenden murders. Many of you will have seen the films about the Essex Boys, read the books about the Essex Boys, and it's a case which has thrown up a hell of a lot of interest and probably made, I would say, the most amount of money for people, over the years. Probably up there, maybe even ahead of the Craze, I would say, because it's had so much interest. And when you look at the case, which is what we're going to do today, it's fascinating, and there's lots of unanswered questions. So, James, welcome to the podcast, mate. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, mate. You're welcome. Thank you.
I see you've got your Manchester United top on, mate, and I should have worn my Newcastle top.
Yeah, I thought you were going to make a comment.
Well, we're doing this. Obviously, it's a pre-recorded 7 o'clock on the 22nd of March, and in 2 hours' time, you'll know whether your club's, who's the main bidder for the club, I guess. Like, so you'll be watching Sky Sports at around 9 o'clock tonight. Should be interesting.
Yeah.
But we're here to discuss the Essex Boys. And what I said before we came on air, mate, was I just really wanted, I wanted you to give us an account of, the Essex Boys story, first of all. So give us an insight into the case, mate.
Well, Tony Tucker, Pat Tate and Craig Rolfe all got murdered on 6th of December 1995. A lot of people believe the two men convicted, Mickey Steele and Jack Wombs, are innocent of the murders. A lot of people want answers. The family want answers. I got involved because I believe everybody believes to rest in peace. I believe no matter what your background is, what your past is, da-da-da-da-da, everyone deserves a shot at resting in peace. Do you know what I mean? That includes me and yourself, mate. You know what I mean? So I believe everybody should get that chance. And I believe that everybody should be like myself and help people that need help without money gained. Do you know what I mean? Like the amount of people what I've met during helping the case, people like yourself. Do you know what I mean? There's no money gained out of anything what I'm doing. It's all strictly to help raise awareness to say Mick and Jack are innocent. Essex police covered up the murders, and everyone needs to stand up and realise that, because the amount of evidence in the case that suggests police cover up or police involvement is just too much to ignore.
Why do you believe that the police covered it up, and what do you believe they covered up?
Well, obviously in Tiberias, the report what came out, you've got, was it the Adams family? There's a phone call where they offered Paul Betts to take out the three dealers that supplied the pill what killed Leah Betts. And then, funnily enough, on the morning of the murders, Janet Betts and Paul Betts are the first two people pulled in for murder. They're the first two people. People don't even know that. And it's like, why is Paul Betts been pulled in on 7th of December after that? Don't add up, mate.
And I mean, again, a lot of this is this stuff that you've researched? Is that public knowledge?
Yeah, that's fact. That's fact.
Is it public knowledge, or has that been put out there before?
Yeah, their statements are in the public domain. You can read Janet Betts. Mm-hmm. The thing what I want people to realise with the Betts is Janet Betts' statement, and I've put this to McKelvey and I've put it to Albert Patrick recently as well, because I've noticed a quite a big discrepancy in Paul Betts' statement. His favourite programme, like you're saying, I'm going to go on Sky Sports at 9 o'clock tonight. Paul Betts' favourite programme was on at 9 p.m. on the 6th of December. And Janet Betts said it was on at 9:30. So there's half an hour from 9 p.m. in Paul Betts' statement where he could have just disappeared for half an hour. Mm. And I find that really interesting. I find that myself personally, like Paul Paul would have been there or watched it happen, or he knew as soon as it happened. And there's not only that, Steve, there's other things as well. There's Nipper's version, Colton's version,
okay,
and Essex Police are a big coincidence in all the versions, what everyone's spouting at the minute.
So who was, just for those people who won't know who these people are, who's Nipper?
Steve Nipper Ellis was a real good friend of Pat Tate's. Used to do a lot of running about for Pat and that back in the day. And then when they fell out, Nipper went to shoot Pat. I've never had this confirmed, but when Pat was in the hospital after Nipper shooting him, Tony Tucker, Craig Grove and Pat Tate was all three meant to have give statements against Nipper. They're all three of them meant to have grassed up on Nipper. But then now we've got DC McKelvey on the case and DS Albert Patrick, and I've asked them to prove it to me if they are or not, and they're saying there's nothing there. They've never made a statement that day or that night. Or so it's like people put things in the air and make a rumour and people believe it. And it's exactly the same what's happening now. Exactly the same thing's happening now. You're all going to get told this Billy Jasper story, and it ain't the truth.
Okay, so Colton Leach, we'll go to him next. Tell us who Colton Leach was.
Colton was a good friend of Tony Tucker's. Pretty much best mates. They had officers next door to one another. Went training. Camped with Nigel Benn before one of his fights out in Marbella. Trained with Nigel Benn and that. Yeah, there's Tony and Nigel there. I've heard Nigel was a good DJ and all back in the day.
Mm-hmm. And you've mentioned
Colton's.
And Colton was part of the infamous ICF as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, part of the inner city firm, yeah, West Ham Boys.
Okay.
And obviously him and Tucker formed a relationship in it. They were good mates. And obviously, I guess, with all the stuff what gets said about the case now, Colton's the like the London side, isn't it? And Tucker was the Essex side. So it was a good relationship for them to have.
And you just mentioned another person there. You said people are going to be fed that story. You're talking about stories being, you know, brought into the equation, and people will be fed that, and they might believe that, and it just keeps the momentum going on fake news, I guess. Who was that other person you just mentioned?
Billy Jasper got arrested 3 months after the murders, and he admitted to an officer, well, it was during the interview, he got a CID officer to come in. He sat down, he wrote out a 12-page statement saying that he was the getaway driver for someone called Mr. D that night, the assassin. And it was wiped under the carpet by Essex Police. And then 6 months later, McKelvey pulls up Darren Nichols with 10 Kia Puff in the boot of his car. McKelvey arrests Darren Nichols. And now McKelvey's back trying to solve the case now after arresting Nichols 24 years ago in 1996. And the thing with that is, I believe Darren McGrath, obviously, he's the key to the case. He's the person that was there. He's the person that said it was Mick and Jack. A lot of people believe his story, but obviously he's changed Mick and Jack's name for the real people that were there. And that's what I believe. I don't believe in the Billy Jasper and the rest of that. I just don't believe it.
Why don't you believe it?
There's certain things what I know personally about Billy Jasper, what I have told people, but it puts a lot of doubt on Billy Jasper. If I said it here and now, what I know, it just don't add up to it being Billy Jasper. Same with the Bowers link with the Peacock's gym where we picked up the stolen car. A lot of people don't know the Bowers are the Womes' cousins, their family. So it's a lot of stuff what people don't know.
So, I mean, James, your connection to this, is this simply you picking up the book one day, a book or... Are you following the story in the newspapers, or, you know, watching documentaries? Explain your involvement. How did you become so engrossed in this case?
When it come out, obviously I watched it on news, and then I got involved in drug dealing myself. Ended up in that world. A few of my mates, we went to TGI Fridays, had a little sit down, little meeting.
Yeah.
And then I got back home that night. My mate puts Rise of the Foot Soldier on, the first one, Colton's one. And I find out the night before the murders, Pat, Tony, Craig and Peter Cuthbert have gone to TGI Fridays, literally sat at exactly the same table. And I didn't know none of this until it come out in the film. And then when I got the statement to find out it was sat at table 24 in TGI Fridays, I rung my mates up and I was like, how mad's that? I've just watched the film and we were sat at the same table. And then I went to the lane, stood where the Range Rover was, and I couldn't believe, if to the left of that photograph there is the, like, Peter Theobald's house. And literally, Steve, it's about 50-60 yards, mate, up the field. Like, yeah. if you've been and stood there, there's no way on earth that 8 shots have been shot with a shotgun and no one's heard it. I don't believe that either.
So that was where your involvement came about. You grew an interest from that scenario.
Well, yeah, I grew up in Tilbury in Essex, so I heard things about them anyway, like Basildon, Brook Road, where Craig Rolfe got pulled over by an officer, was my old street. I lived on that street. Mm. And then when Craig Rolfe did his statement to say that he was waiting for kids to come back from school, obviously I've told everyone when I've got involved to say, hold on, I've lived on Brook Road. There's no school anywhere near. Yeah. So what was Craig Rolfe doing there? And he got pulled up by a police officer and given his brother's details. That was a couple of days before he got shot. Pat Tate beats up the geezer in the pizza parlour the day before he gets murdered, mate. Essex police go back there and tell Roger Ryle not to make a statement against Pat Tate. Otherwise, Pat Tate's going to come back and do you. The next day, he's taken out the game completely. Same with the surveillance stuff. They was under surveillance the night that they was murdered. And I can guarantee that murder got watched. And I dare say it got videoed as well.
Interesting claim. So you become interested. You start studying the case. You're obviously in the locality as well. You've been down to see the murder scene. How did you take it the next step? Because, I mean, you know, obviously you follow the case. Arrests are made. And then the trial takes place. I mean, give us your views about the two guys arrested and charged and tried and then eventually sentenced.
Well, it's a load of fucking bollocks in my eyes, mate. Sorry for the French. There's a certain doorman that's making certain videos about the case now that's going up against McKelvey and the Billy Jasper story, which is a bit shit for me now because I'm agreeing with that person. I don't believe the Billy Jasper theory, just like he doesn't. But he's trying to manipulate and tell people and clickbait people to get views and just milking the case for money. There's just no need for it. If he can prove that Mick and Jack did it, then why didn't he do that to me 10, 15 years ago when I first spoken to him? When Steve, when he realised that I knew what I was talking about and I was putting certain questions across and he couldn't answer them questions, he got all defensive and threatening on me. And it's exactly the same now. I've got people, my members of my group, exactly the same treatment. You've had it yourself off the same person. And it's just, Colton Leach did his podcast, a week ago with Dodge Woodall. It's got nearly quarter of a million views in a week. This doorman, he's putting these latest bombshells about the case, what are meant to be blowing the case wide open. He's getting a few hundred views. People are starting to realise that he's fake and he's a grass and he's a wrong'un. And he just gets in people's lives to twist, manipulate, and then he'll try and tell your story in his narrative for him to get paid out of it. And I've been offered like books, I've been offered film roles, I've been offered everything you can think to do with this case. The film that you was in, I got offered a part in that myself. I turned it down. I said, nah, you're right. Why would I want to be made famous for three men that have been killed, mate? That ain't what I want to get famous for. I want them to be proven innocent because they're innocent men. Mick 78, he's got his parole in, mate. And now this doorman's putting certain videos up trying to mess up his parole and that. He's actually writing to the CCRC to try and stop them letting Mick out. Why would you do that? He's 78 year old. He's no threat to you. Why would you do that?
Again, for those people who are watching this who don't know the history, I mean, the two guys convicted, Michael Steele and Jack Holmes. Jack has since been freed. Career criminals, right?
No.
No, because the way that you would see, the way that the media portrays them, you would think they were. So tell us what Michael and Jack were all about.
Jack was a car mechanic, studied engineering. He got done for a few minor offences like ringing cars when he lived in Norwich with his brother. That's pretty much it with Jack. Mick, he's had, I think, one or two big charges, like for smuggling charges from the people that bring it in customs. Customs have got him, I think, twice. And it seems like customs are involved with the operation that got him this time around. Like Mick was a very smart man and he knew how to play them lads. Do you know what I mean? He was a very smart man. There was one occasion where he's bringing back a parcel of drugs and he knew that the police of customs were going to stop him. So he's got his mate to come out on a boat, take the drugs and fill the boat up with porno. And then when he's come into the customs, the police have gone, raided his boat, found boxes of porno and they couldn't do him for nothing. But Mick knew that they was going to pull him. So he's a smart man. And Mick's been in every prison what he's been in now, what you can name, in every cell. He's got his typewriter and he's trying to show everyone that he's innocent. But he's got no voice, Steve. Is he? He's sat in a prison cell on his own, mate. No one's sticking up for Mick.
Not career criminals. Any history with violence or firearms?
No. No.
So what was the evidence that, you know, that convicted these two guys who quite clearly don't have, you know, the kind of criminal CV that you would expect somebody to have who would, you know, take people out in such a gangland assassination style in the Range Rover?
That's one of the golden questions, isn't it? Without asking the jury. Obviously, this is what I'm saying, like with the doorman, he's trying to make you think now that the Holmes family have kept all the prosecution evidence that shows Mick and Jack were guilty of the crime. But the judge is summing up, like I said to you yesterday. The judge said, if you believe Darren Nichols, then Mick and Jack are guilty. If you don't believe Darren Nichols, then they're innocent men. So there is no other prosecution evidence that anybody can come out with to show you that Mick and Jack did that crime. There is absolutely sweet FA. There's nothing. Otherwise, you'd know about it. It'll be in the public domain. You're not going to have two of the top detectives in the country reviewing the case lying to you because that's not going to be good for them, is it? They're reputable men at the top of their game. They're the most professional, high-end police officers that you can name. And now you've got, like I said to you yesterday, Angela Gallup, the world's leading forensic officer, has asked Essex Police to re-go over the forensics. And Essex Police has turned around and said no.
I read a couple of years ago an article and then was pointed towards this particular podcast where Steve Nipperellis, who you mentioned earlier, claimed that his dad murdered
Yes.
The guys in the Range Rover. What, Sid, what, because he claimed that the lads had threatened to cut off his sister's finger. What was your views when you heard that?
It's, I believe Nipper, I believe he believes in what he's saying. I believe his dad found him that morning and told him. But this is the thing with that is, lay down, girl. The thing with that is, Detective Bright received a phone call at 6:30 a.m. on the morning of the murders from a drug squad officer. Mm. And he said he found Tucker, he found Tate, but he didn't recognise the driver. Now, Colton Leach said they went for a meeting at 6 o'clock in the morning. And he knows who got them down that lane. He knows who called that meeting. Then we bring Nipper into it. This is where the 6 a.m. is the important part. Nipper's dad rings him early hours in the morning. His dad told him that Tucker and Tate were dead, but he didn't recognise, he said Ralphie or something, he didn't recognise Craig Ralph, which is exactly the same as what the drug squad officer told DC Bright on the morning of the murders. And obviously in Nipper's podcast, he talks about his dad doing it with his policeman friend who owns a tattoo shop in Southend. So what's the chances that that drug squad officer that found DC Bright on the morning of the murders is the same officer that went with Sid and killed them three boys? What's the odd?
Hmm. Interesting. You mentioned McKelvey as well earlier on.
Yeah.
What changed his mind? Was it Jasper's evidence that came forward? Because McKelvey, I think, for years believed that the lads were guilty. And I think he claimed that it was you know, Jasper naming the assassin. And those who plotted the murder. And I think that was what changed his mind. Am I right in saying that?
Yes and no. I don't know who actually contacted McKelvey, but at the time that when he got involved with the case, he was the best officer in the country to do it. And then he's got DS Patrick and the rest of his team now looking at it. And after Steve, I said to him from day one, mate, it's corruption, Essex Police all over the case. Mm. And then when my emails come out from McKelvey, Patrick and myself, and I show you what I've done and how I've done it, mate, people are going to be like, you what? It's just like, why didn't you just listen to James fucking months ago? I said it was corruption. I said what happened. I told them what happened. Their first email back to me is they don't believe it. And then 3-4 months after they've done all their research, they're coming back to me saying, oh, the corruption's stinking in this case, James. I'm like, I told you that 3 months ago. And they don't believe me. Essex Police at this minute in time are not letting Patrick, McKelvey or anybody near the evidence that they want to see. So it's Essex Police that are stopping the case, stopping the truth from being told. Nobody else but Essex Police. Why do they want to keep a lid on it? Do you know what I mean? Look at all the corruption stuff, what's coming out now. It'll be the perfect time now for them to put their hands up and admit to what they did. But then the money, what's involved? Can you imagine how much money Jack and Mick will get if they get proven innocent of this crime? Can you imagine it? It would put Britain in debt. So now you know that, do you think it's going to get proven that they were innocent?
There's been big cases before where people have, have been found innocent after serving long sentences. I mean, it's, you know, the Birmingham Six, wasn't it? I think Paddy Hill and the guys who got out and, you know, were released and, you know, obviously made lots of, got compensation, I believe. But, you never say never, I guess. I mean, Jack's out now. How has Jack coped? And have you spoken to Jack? Do you know what Jack's situation is and how he feels about this ongoing situation with Michael?
Yeah, Jack's back living with his mum, seeing all his kids, seeing all his family. He's doing really well. I can't speak to Jack until the case is done with. There's certain people that are trying to manipulate me and use me at the minute, And obviously, I've got to be a step ahead of that, because I'm not going to have my name dragged down through being used and abused by certain people to do with the case. Obviously, when I proved Jack's innocent, I'll be going straight to his brother's pub, buying him a pint. That's what I want to do. Same with Mick. And then we can go our separate ways. Yeah, innocent man.
Obviously, the films, the books, the documentaries you've already mentioned. I did Rise of the Foot Soldier 3. I had a lot of fun making it. I mean, to me, it was a job as an actor, given the opportunity to do it, working with some incredible people and putting together a film, which is there for entertainment. It didn't bypass me, though, as somebody who, has got an interest in true crime, that I was helping by being in the film, fanning the flames, fanning the flames of a story which, has affected lots of people. And when I say lots of people, I mean the family that's left behind of the victims. We can't judge the lads. At the end of the day, they chose their path in life, and they've paid the ultimate consequence for that. But they did leave family behind, so those people have to suffer, the indignity each time of seeing the scene repeated where those people met their untimely end. And it didn't, it's not something I took lightly. I've got to be perfectly honest. I knew that it would hurt somebody by doing that film. I got paid. I'm an actor. I'm a professional, and I did that. I don't think you would ever get immune to it. What do you think firstly about the amount of films that have been done and documentaries and books about this case?
Well, what is it now? I think it's like 14 films now. It's an absolute joke, isn't it? But obviously, until the truth comes out, it will be made, because it's an interesting story. And then even when the truth comes out, I dare say that'll be made into a film or a book. You know what I mean? Mickey still can come out and write his own book or do his own film, or he's going to get offers off people when he gets out. There's DeGrasse in the case, who's already written a book on the case while the trial was ongoing. Got paid out for it before the trial even went to trial. I don't believe, like with people like yourself, I've got to say, Steve, thank you for saying that about like fanning the flames for the case and that. But at the same time, you're keeping it alive. Like these new films, it gives people like me that motivation to say, nah, mate, I'm going to fucking prove you all wrong, mate. Do you know what I mean? So it does help. The way that the films have been done, obviously, when it goes to like yourself, you've had books out and stuff, you've been in films, it all gets edited, it goes up to different people, different levels of the game and the industry, the film industry, all that stuff. They're more expert, they're more knowledge than me. So when they write their script for Rise of the Foot Soldier 3 or 4, I can tell you which bits in the film are absolutely true, and I can explain it in the truthful way that it happened. But then in the film, it might have happened a bit more glamorous, or the twisted it, like the pizza parlor incident. Pat goes in there and cuts him with a pizza cutter, smashes his head on the counter, picks a plate up, smashes it over his head. That ain't how it happened. But obviously, that's how they put it in the film. And that incident happened. So you believe it how you see it, innit? It's like you believe what you see in it, like when you're a kid and you're learning how to read. It's picture books, innit? You learn from pictures. And it's exactly the same way with the films. Obviously, look at Colton. Ricky Hartnett, he's not allowed to play. Like, he's had crap given to him because of playing Colton Leach in the film. Now he's fell out with Andy Carnaby, who's done the latest films, who's doing more films. You know what I mean? He's doing this one, Tate, 2 Days of Blood. Has he asked any of Tate's family for permission? Like I do when I speak to people. Do you know what I mean? I speak to people on the level. I say to you, anything we speak about is between me and you. If you give me your blessing to tell the world about it, then that's how I do it. That's how my information comes out. And then it's up to you whether you believe me or not. And that's the best way I think it to be.
I guess, and again, it's, you know, the way that it works, unfortunately, for the families is that, you know, when somebody passes away, I guess in the world of the movies, it's fair game, you know. If it's in the public domain, it's fair game. That's the way it works. It's not fair, I guess. And
but Mick and Jack, because they've been convicted and named, you can name them in any film that comes out. But if they get proven innocent, like I said, the money what they'll be owed off the government, imagine all the films. You'd have to take all that back.
Yeah.
How would you do it?
There'll definitely be, if they were cleared, for instance, you know, it there'll be something in those films where they say it's an entertainment, it's loosely based on the story. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's a nest of vipers, and it's one which I'm glad I wouldn't have to negotiate. I haven't done the Sayers film this year, filmed it last year, comes out this year, A New Breed of Criminal. We've got the blessing of the family, of course. But again, the way that I've done that is I've been very careful not to upset certain people or upset certain families. And it's loosely based on the story. I certainly had it in my mind when we were putting that together with you know, the fact that we're looking at potentially making that a franchise, that I didn't want to upset any victims, shall we say, or any family members that may be still around. So it did cross my mind, but I guess with other people, you know, it doesn't. I mean, I guess, and it'll surprise people watching as well, you know, these films, and you say what, 14 films, documentaries, countless books, lots of newspaper articles, YouTube podcasts now, which are becoming very popular. But when you look at the reign that, you know, the Essex Boys actually had, we're actually not even talking a massive period of time. This isn't like the crazed reign of terror in the East End of London from the 50s through to the late 60s. You know, you're probably talking the best part of 18 months of, you know, running around causing mayhem in Essex and then ending up dead.
Well, it's quite mad, like, doing this podcast with yourself now. Obviously, it was Charlie Cray what was supposed to have got the doorman the job at Raquel's. And I would like to find out some more about that. Obviously, when I first got involved and I did find out about Charlie Cray giving him the job on the door, I did tell everybody that. But the thing is, that gives that person a little bit of a flame under their arsehole, wouldn't it? Because they can say Charlie Cray. He can use people's names. I get what you're saying with the Sayers film about you didn't want to step on certain people's toes and stuff like that. I'm not like that. I've grew up in the criminal system, the criminal world. I've had policemen try to turn me into a grass. I've had mates grass on me. I've been put away for friends grassing on me. The underworld code, all that stuff, I think it's all bollocks, mate. I believe it's down to like me and yourself as a character. It's down to you and it's down to me. If I want to grass on you, I will. If I don't want to grass on you, bruv, if I like you, if you're good, mate, I won't. I'm loyal to you. That's how it works. Do you know what I mean? A lot of people spat the underworld, the undercode respect. We're not in them times no more, Steve. No, they've gone.
It's moved on. Drugs changed the underworld for forever.
The whole underworld's changed now. It's all kids, mate, running about wanting to be these gangsters. But now we've not got enough people helping, like the old school generation needs to be showing them the consequences of their actions and what'll happen. Not doing podcasts on YouTube talking about what they've done in past to people. They need to be getting out there and helping these kids, mate.
Yeah.
That's my take.
There is no discipline, there is no code of conduct now, there is no code of honour. And that, as I say, that disappeared a long time ago. And I've never been a criminal. That's just from studying crime and criminals and meeting a lot of the big names along the way. So I agree wholeheartedly with you. As for the next generation, it's quite worrying. It's quite frightening. Me as a father, it is quite worrying that at some point I'll not be here anymore, and my kids have to fend for themselves in a world which is getting increasingly worse. And you know, those days, those days of ease, and you know, everybody loving each other, that brief summer of love that we had in the late 80s, early 90s, seems like a distant memory, you know. And ultimately, like I said, where this all ended for the lads was here, you know, Graves, you know. And at such a young age, 37-year-old, you know, for Pat, it was still very young, still their lives, like, you know, lives ahead of them. I mean, just getting back to the, you know, the actual motives for killing them. I mean, is you know, in your mind, you know, you've studied the case for a long time. What do you have a clear understanding why you think they were killed? Was it simply down to, you know, the, you know, what you said earlier, or you know, do you think there's, have you got more than one idea of why they were killed? What's your views on that?
Everything what was going off at the time after Leah Betts died, they had to put two people, they had to get someone for it, put them in jail. And Pat, Tony and Craig, I don't know why they was going round doing what they was doing. Do you know what I mean? Tucker had his business with Colton and that, earning money off the doors, doing well. Craig Rolfe, he was going around robbing dealers, taxing dealers, so Tucker didn't have to pay for his stuff, which I don't get why. If he's got the money, why don't you buy it? And obviously, Pat was the enforcer. Pat was just obviously going off his nut and then beating people up, but it gave him that name, didn't it? Do you know what I mean? A lot of people call Pat Tate a bully, but the people that actually knew him, he was a gentle giant, mate. I've got nothing but respect for Pat. Talk highly of Pat.
Yeah, and I think as well, the films, you know, and the documentaries, you know, give that impression. People watch them, and in a film, it's an entertainment. It's got to be violent, and people just get that impression of him, you know. And it's certain events are emphasized, and there's things added. You've already mentioned the pizza shop scene is something which has been exaggerated to the extent where it looks as if it's a major event, when in fact it's, you know, it wasn't like that.
No, obviously the police didn't bother. They went back to Roger Ryle and said, don't make a statement against Pat Tate because it'll make it worse for you. So he didn't. But it's like, what's your opinion with, yeah, you know, we can share an opinion here with the Range Rover. What do you think about, even that's a sham. That come back out of the woodwork. I think it made up to, like, what was it, 50 grand. And now someone's driving about in it, or it's sat in a lockup. I actually found out where that was, what garage it was in, and I was trying to get to it so I could burn it out. I do not want that car on the road. And I'm sure that Pat, Tony and Craig's kids do not want that car on the road. I had my admin from my Facebook group go to the garage, to where the Range Rover was. He sat in it, took pictures in it, come back to my admin chat, put them in the admin chat, and I went mad. I was like, I want that car gone, mate. I don't want you sat there where Craig got his head blown off taking selfies. I want it gone. It should be off the road. And
is that the actual car, though? Because I always doubted it when you know, when we saw that this car was suddenly back in circulation, I found it very hard to believe that somebody would have the exact car. And I got to be honest, I felt it we were just being hoodwinked and fobbed off. You know, anybody could get the same model, they could get some plates knocked up. Is there proof that car still exists?
Yeah, that is the exact car. It got bought by, is it Paul Bush?
Right.
I think he's currently in prison now. For some cocaine charges.
We'll say allegedly there, just in case he isn't, but yeah.
Yeah, allegedly in for some cocaine stuff. There's the Range Rover and the Danny Dyer's documentary, Deadliest Men Program. That's Paul Bush in that program.
Okay.
He's a big fellow with loads of gold on. He's the one that went down there to say that they could photograph the Range Rover. But then people say, it's not got a sunroof. Like, people take the photos and look at every minor detail with that Range Rover. Do you know what I mean? The door hinges on the outside being out, not popped in, because that's on the later model. But we've checked the chassis. We've got the VIN numbers. We've got the numbers off all the windows what weren't smashed from back in 1995. I gave McKelvey the information to where the Range Rover was. He told me he was going to get it scientifically tested, forensically tested. Whether that's happened or not, he's not told me, so I don't know. But I asked him, I've got him it. But just ask yourself this, Steve. Why is it always me? Why ain't no one else asked me? Like, everyone's trying to use me at this minute in time and say, like, I don't know what I'm talking about and stuff like that. How come no one asked McKelvey to get that Range Rover except from me? All these people that are meant to be helping the case, but it was me that asked. All these people that are helping the case, but it's me that phoned up the CCRC asking about Mick. It's me speaking with Essex Police, telling Essex Police that I'm going to find Darren, and Darren is going to tell the truth. And they don't even know what to say to me. They're on the phone like, okay, James. But yet I'm being told it's an offence to look for a grass. Why haven't I been arrested then? I've been looking for Darren for about 10 years now. Openly. All over the world. And I've not even been pulled in. That, to me, says that they're dodgy, mate. It shows.
When Jack was in prison, did he you know, push for, you know, try and push for early release? Did, you know, and was he trying to clear his name behind bars?
Yeah, he'd done every course he could do education wise. Got himself every qualification he could. Kept his head down. He had a few incidences with people in jail because, obviously, if you heard that he'd done that crime and you're going into that prison thinking you're a bit of a someone, you're going to go up to Jack and say, oh, like, well done, or you're going to say something along those lines. Jack was innocent throughout. He kept himself to himself. Everyone that's ever been in any prison with Jack or Mick all say they're innocent. They're not. I've been in jail, Steve. I've been in prison. And you can tell when someone's innocent, mate. When you're out on the association, playing pool, people on the phone and that, you can see the innocent ones. You can tell. Do you know what I mean? They're normally walking around with a back hunched, head down, mate. Too scared to, like, speak to any of us on the wing because they're not about that life. They're an innocent person. And you can see that in people. And everyone that's seen Mick and Jack in prison have said that exact same thing.
Obviously, they were both sentenced to three life sentences with a recommendation to serve 15 years. Jack got out after 22 years. I see in one of the recent reports that I read that it was exemplary behaviour, you know, behind prison, not seen as a risk. So why is Michael still in prison?
He's tried to sue the British government about, I think, 3-4 times now. So they're basically turning around saying, fuck you, Mick, we'll keep you in, you can die in jail. That's what the opinion of everybody is. He got into a fight, had a tooth knocked out. He sued the British government for, I think, £44,000. And obviously now they've took that against them now, so they want to keep him in. And then the CCRC, they're just batting it back. Essex Police are currently in talks with the CCRC. CCRC are currently in talks with Essex Police, but they're not showing anything. They're not telling anything. They want him to die in jail. Same with Charlie. Do you know what I mean? Poor Charlie, mate. What's he done, 48 years? I really, really hope that man gets out, but I don't think he will. But then with everything what's happening right now, it's a perfect time to let him out. And it'll help a lot of people, Charlie getting out. It'll help loads of people.
So Michael's obviously still inside. You think that he's being punished for trying to, for standing up against him. What's next for you, mate? I mean, you're putting a lot of time and effort into something which ultimately won't bring you a personal reward. What's the end game for you, James? What do you want to achieve by doing what you've been doing and setting up the Facebook group and being a thorn, I guess, in the police's side?
just to help. Obviously, there's just to show people that there are people out there that just want to help, just for the sake of helping. You know what I mean? You've got Ricky Percival case, John Marshall case, all the links back to the lads as well. There was a murder before Pat, Tony and Craig that's linked to Pat, Tony and Craig. A murder what happened in, I think, 1989, I believe. And that was meant to be the same person that killed that person in the forest as the same person that killed Pat, Tony and Craig. Obviously, Mr. D, the people that people thought Mr. D was actually tried to join my Facebook group. I managed to get a picture of Mr. D from back in the 90s, and then I found him on Facebook, and then about 3 days after I found him, he's tried to join my group. My admin, Dan, who was the one that went to the Range Rover, he declined Mr. D's entry into my Facebook group. So obviously I've had to go in the chat and say, look, you need to inbox Mr. D, mate, because this is the person that thousands of people believe killed Pat, Tony and Craig, and he's requesting to join the group. But now I'm being told his surname's spelt differently. It's a different name. It's not the Mr. D that we know. Even though I'm telling you, that photo, what I've got of him back then, and the photo of his profile now on Facebook is the same person, I'm being told that it's not that person. Why I'm being told that, I don't know. He did try to come onto the group again after that. And now, obviously, the doorman's apparently been to see Mr. D. But then Billy Jasper's not talking to McKelvey or Patrick. I've had 3 profiles for him on my Facebook group. One of them was registered to Thailand. The day that the newspaper article come out that Jack was getting a year off his sentence, the doorman registered on Facebook, checking in, going to Thailand. The day after that newspaper article dropped and he went to Thailand, Billy Jasper's profile completely disappeared off Facebook. Completely gone, vanished. So that told me what I needed to know. It told me he's gone out there, seen him, had a word, told him to keep under radar, whatever he said to him. And there's going to be more dodgy recordings coming out. Do you know what I mean? I'm named in Colton Leach's current court case with this doorman for bullying, which you've known me for years now, Steve. I've known you since 2017, mate. Am I a bully?
No, mate.
Exactly, mate. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I don't know. People are trying to say things about me what just ain't true, and it's like people what don't even know me. And I'm still here. I'm still going to help Mick and Jack, and I'm not going nowhere until their names are cleared. And then I'll help the next person who needs help. But if you was researching the case and you was like, James, fancy helping me after that, I'd help you out. It's just who I am.
Have you, you know, spoken to or had communication with any of the family of the lads, of the Essex boys?
Yeah, Pat, I speak to his sister Deborah, his brother Alan. I've not spoken to his son, but I'm aware of his son Jordan, and he looks
What do they think of all of this?
They believe it was higher up than Mick and Jack that did the crime, but they don't believe that the truth will come out. And this is what bugs me when people say, like, the levels of your criminality. Like, obviously, Jack and Mick were high-end up smugglers, but people don't seem to believe that they were capable of a triple murder. They weren't about that life, do you know what I mean? They weren't murderers. Everyone in the families believed the same as me. They wouldn't be with me, Steve, would they? They would not be on my group if they did not believe that what I'm saying is truthful. Do you know what I mean? You just wouldn't do it, would you? Like, no. You're saying with the films. Every time a film comes out, it gets brought back up again. But I put new information out there and all the members of the family get to see it all. And then they can work it out from whatever I'm saying. Whatever information I put out there, if they know different to me and they can work it out themselves, then I'm getting them that peace of mind. I'm putting Pat, Tony and Craig's memory to rest. And that's what I believe. That's what I want. We all deserve it, end of day.
I'm sure a lot of people will probably, you know, want to show their support for Mick You know, is he a letter writer? Does he like getting mail in, or is he somebody who's quite private and doesn't like to be, you know, doesn't like the intrusion?
Years ago, when I first contacted Jack and Mick, I wrote them both a letter and said to them both that I believe that they're innocent and I'm going to help out. I believe Jack still got that letter, what I writ all them years ago. I don't know about Mick. Obviously, this is the thing with like people, what I say to you, people about trying to use me and say shit about me. I've had my own admin go to Mick and mention my name, and Mick come back saying I've not heard of James Waldron to people. And it's like, obviously he has. Unless McKelvey and Patrick, all these people that are going to see Mick to try and help him, are just keeping my name off the record for some reason, for gain of themselves, I don't know. Mick does write to people. He's on that email of prisoner.com. I think it's like 39p you can write to Mick, and he will write to you back. So he does write to people. I do believe everyone should be writing to Mick and helping him out. He does need, like now I've come back involved. I want people to support me now. I need that backup. I need my voice back. I need people to stand up and get this man out of jail and let him live the last 10 years of his life at home, mate. That's all.
Which prison's he in, James?
I believe he's in Wakefield at the minute.
Okay, Monster Mansion.
Yeah.
Been there on a couple of visits to see Charlie in the past. Anything else you want to say? I mean, obviously, you've used this opportunity to promote the Facebook group, etc. If you want anything else you want to put across, use the opportunity now, James.
Yeah, I just want to say to people, look, it's time now. Do you know what I mean? We've got all these detectives involved. We've got this doorman involved. We've got all these more stories coming out of the woodwork after 27 years. In order for the truth to be told, we all need to be together and we all need to get the truth out. There's no tit for tat between me and certain doormen. There's no tit for tat between me and these coppers that are solving the case. I'm telling them information that they don't even know. They're surprised about. So we all need to get our heads together and get Mick out of jail. And then we can all crack on with our lives. You know what I mean? People say to me all the time, James, it took over your life. I'm like, no, it's not. But I know that they're innocent men. And they deserve to have their names cleared. And Pat, Tony and Craig, no matter what they did, deserve to rest in peace. Their families deserve to go to a cinema and not see Rise of the Foot Soldier fucking number 34 on the billboard. That's what they deserve.
James, been a great insight, mate. Thanks for taking the time to come on. What's the name of the Facebook group, just so people can maybe pop on there and add themselves?
It's Essex Boys Then and Now. And obviously, everyone that joins the group now, you're all in one chat. We're all there together. So it's like a community now. So we can all help each other. Prove Mick.
Great stuff, mate. Thanks for coming on. Means a lot, mate. And best of luck with everything you do, James. Thanks very much, mate.
Yeah. Thanks for taking me on, mate.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Cheers, Steve. See you later.
Big thanks to James for coming on. Great story, fascinating story. Leave your comments below. I'm going to play out with a new Breed of Criminal trailer, an opportunity for you to see this film on all downloadable services coming in summer 2023.
I shall be moving on soon, so I want to ask you a favour.
Name it.
Don't make the same mistake that me and my brothers have done.
If you lads pull this off, you're going to go down in
Goodbye
history.
Goodbye to you, my trusted friend.
Where's that? Sunderland.
Each other since we were 9 or 10.
You're talking about the post office, aren't you? How much we're looking at? Maybe more.
Any news on Stephen Sayers?
Word on the street is he's headed to the Costas.
We're a long way from York Street now, mate.
This deal, it's the start of the big thing.
We're a new breed of criminal.
There's only one way that this is going to go, Stephen. In any happy ending for the life you three have chosen. Please think about him.
By my friend, it's hard to die.
Or me.
They're a family of West Enders who think they run Newcastle. They're a couple of jumped up, jacked the lads out of their depth.
Stephen has been a while.
They think the big fish in the little pond.
That's my bomb.
Mr. Stevenson, I'm arresting you on suspicion of armed robbery. You do not have to say anything, but anything you do say may be used in evidence against you.
You can't beat the system. If you try, well, I'll just lock you up.
We had joy, we had fun, we had seasons in the sun, but the hills that we climbed were just seasons at a time. We had joy, we had fun,
and if you try,
seasons in the sun, but the hills that we climbed,
they'll throw away the key.